chased after him down the staircase. "Remember what you said to me in Alicante." They had reached the kitchen. He put the cup down on the counter, reaching for his steely. "I had no right to say that," he told her. "Clary, this is what we are. We're shadow hunters. This is what we do. There are risks we take that aren't just the risks you find in battle." Clary shook her head, clutching both his wrists. "I won't let you." A look of pain crossed his face. "Clarissa." She drew a deep breath, barely able to believe what she was about to do. But in her mind was the image of the morgue in the Silent City, of Shadowhunter bodies stretched out on marble slabs, and she could not bear for Jace to be one of them. Everything she had done, coming here, enduring everything she had endured, had been to save his life, and not just for herself. She thought of Alec and Isabel, who had helped her, and Maris, who loved him. And almost without knowing she was about to do it, she raised her voice and called out. "Jonathan!" she screamed. "Jonathan Christopher Morgenstern!" Jace's eyes widened into circles. "Clary!" he began, but it was too late already. She had let go of him and was backing away. Sebastian might already be coming. There was no way to tell Jace that it wasn't that she trusted Sebastian, but that Sebastian was the only weapon she had at her disposal that could possibly make him stay. There was a flash of movement, and Sebastian was there. He hadn't bothered with running down the stairs, just flipped himself over the side and landed between them. His hair was sleep must. He wore a dark t-shirt and black pants, and Clary wondered distractedly if he slept in his clothes. He glanced between Clary and Jace, his black eyes taking in the situation. "Lovers spat?" he inquired. Something glinted in his hand. "A knife?" Clary's voice shook. "His rune's damaged. Here." She put her hand over her heart. "He's trying to go back, to give himself up to the Clave." Sebastian's hand shot out and grabbed the cup out of Jace's hand. He slammed it down on the kitchen counter. Jace, so white with shock, watched him. He didn't move a muscle as Sebastian stepped close and took Jace by the front of the shirt. The top buttons on the shirt popped open, baring his collar, and Sebastian slashed the point of his steely across it, gashing an Arazi into the skin. Jace bit down on his lip, his eyes full of hatred as Sebastian released him and took a step back, steely in hand. "Honestly, Jace," he said, "the idea that you thought you could get away with something like that just knocks me out." Jace's hands tightened into fists as the Arazi, black as charcoal, began to sink into his skin. His words were eked out, breathless. "Next time you want to be knocked, I'd be happy to help you. Maybe with a brick." Sebastian made a tisk noise. "You'll thank me later. Even you have to admit, this death wish of yours is a little extreme." Clary expected Jace to snap back at him again, but he didn't. His gaze traveled slowly across Sebastian's face. For that moment, there was only the two of them in the room, and when Jace spoke, his words came cold and clear. "I won't remember this later," he said. "But you will. That person who acts like your friend?" He took a step forward, closing the space between himself and Sebastian. "That person who acts like they like you? That person isn't real. This is real. This is me. And I hate you. I will always hate you. And there is no magic and no spell in this world or any other that will ever change that." For a moment, the grin on Sebastian's face wavered, but Jace didn't. Instead, he tore his gaze from Sebastian and looked at Clary. "I need you to know," he said, "the truth. I didn't tell you all the truth." "The truth is dangerous, said Sebastian, holding the stele before him like a knife. Be careful what you say. Jace winced. His chest was rising and falling rapidly. It was clear that the healing of the rune on his chest was causing him physical pain. The plan, he said, to raise Lilith, to make a new cup, to create a dark army. That wasn't Sebastian's plan. It was mine. Clary froze. What? Sebastian knew what he wanted, said Jace, but I figured out how he could do it. A new mortal cup. I gave him that idea. He jerked in pain. She could imagine what was happening under the cloth of his shirt, the skin knitting together, healing, Lilith's rune whole and shining once again. Or, should I say, he did. That thing that looks like me but isn't. He'll burn down the world if Sebastian wants him to, and laugh while he's doing it. That's what you're saving, Clary. That. Don't you understand? I'd rather be dead. His voice choked off as he doubled over. The muscles in his shoulders tightened as ripples of what looked like pain went through him. Clary remembered holding him in the silent city as the brothers rooted around his mind for answers. Now he looked up, his expression bewildered. His eyes shifted first not to her, but to Sebastian. She felt her heart plummet, though she knew this was only her own doing. What's going on? Jace said. Sebastian grinned at him. Welcome back. Jace blinked, looking momentarily confused. And then, his gaze seemed to slide inward, the way it did whenever Clary tried to bring up something he couldn't process. Max's murder, the war in Alicante, the pain he was causing his family. Is it time? He said. Sebastian made a show of looking at his watch. Just about. Why don't you go on ahead and we'll follow? You can start getting things ready. Jace glanced around. The cup. Where is it? Sebastian took it off the kitchen counter. Right here. Feeling a little absent-minded? Jace's mouth curled at the corner, and he grabbed the cup back, good-naturedly. There was no sign of the boy who had stood in front of Sebastian moments ago and told him he hated him. All right, I'll meet you there. He turned to Clary, who was still frozen in shock, and kissed her cheek. And you. He drew back and winked at her. There was affection in his eyes, but it didn't matter. This was not her Jace. Very clearly not her Jace. And she watched numbly as he crossed the room. His stele flashed, and a door opened in the wall. She caught a glimpse of sky and rocky plain, and then he stepped through it and was gone. She dug her nails into her palms. That thing that looks like me, but isn't? He'll burn down the world if Sebastian wants him to, and laugh while he's doing it. That's what you're saving, Clary. That. Don't you understand? I'd rather be dead. Tears burned at the back of her throat, and it was all she could do to hold them off as her brother turned to her, his black eyes very bright. You called for me, he said. He wanted to give himself up to the Clave, she whispered. Not sure who she was defending herself to. She had done what she'd had to, used the only weapon at hand, even if it was one she despised. They would have killed him. You called for me, he said again, and took a step toward her. He reached out and lifted a long lock of her hair away from her face, tucking it back behind her ear. He told you then. The plan? All of it? She fought back a shiver of revulsion. Not all of it. I don't know what's happening tonight. What did Jace mean, it's time? He leaned down and kissed her forehead. She felt the kiss burn, like a brand between her eyes. You'll find out, he said. You've earned the right to be there, Clarissa, You can watch it all from your place at my side, tonight, at the seventh sacred site. Both of Valentine's children, together, at last. Simon kept his eyes on the paper, chanting out the words Magnus had written for him. They had a rhythm to them that was like music, light and sharp and fine. He was reminded of reading aloud his Haftorah portion during his bar mitzvah, though he had known what the words meant then, and now he didn't. As the chant went on, he felt a tightening around him, as if the air were becoming denser and heavier. It pressed down on his chest and shoulders. The air was growing warmer as well. If he were human, the heat might have been unbearable. As it was, he could feel the burn of it on his skin, singeing his eyelashes, his shirt. He kept his eyes fixed on the paper in front of him as a bead of blood ran from his hairline to drip onto the paper. And then he was done. The last of the words, Raziel, were spoken, and he lifted his head. He could feel blood running down his face. The haze around him had cleared, and in front of him he saw the water of the lake, blue and sparkling, as untroubled as glass. And then it exploded. The center of the lake turned gold, then black. Water rushed away from it, pouring toward the edges of the lake, flying into the air until Simon was staring at a ring of water, like a circle of unbroken waterfalls, all shimmering and pouring upward and downward, the effect bizarre and strangely beautiful. Water droplets shivered down onto him, cooling his burning skin. He tipped his head back, just as the sky went black, all the blue of it gone, eaten up in a sudden shock of darkness and clamoring gray clouds. The water splashed back down into the lake, and from its center, the greatest density of its silver, rose a figure, all of gold. Simon's mouth went dry. He had seen countless paintings of angels, believed in them, had heard Magnus's warning, and still he felt as if he had been struck through with a spear, as before him a pair of wings unfolded. They seemed to span the sky. They were vast, white and gold and silver, the feathers of them set with burning golden eyes. The eyes regarded him with scorn. Then the wings lifted, scattering clouds before them, and folded back, and a man, or the shape of a man, towering and many stories tall, unfolded itself and rose. Simon's teeth had started to chatter. He wasn't sure why, but waves of power, of something more than power, of the elemental force of the universe, seemed to roll off the angel as he rose to his full height. Simon's first and rather bizarre thought was that it looked as if someone had taken Jace and blown him up to the size of a billboard. Only, he didn't quite look like Jace at all. He was gold all over, from his wings to his skin to his eyes, which had no whites at all, only a sheen of gold like a membrane. His hair was gold and looked cut from pieces of metal that curled like wrought ironwork. He was alien and terrifying. Too much of anything could destroy you, Simon thought. Too much darkness could kill, but too much light could blind. "Who dares to summon me?" The angel spoke in Simon's mind, in a voice like great bells sounding. Tricky question, Simon thought. If he were Jace, he could say, "One of the Nephilim." And if he were Magnus, he could say he was one of Lilith's children and a high warlock. Clary and the angel had already met, so he supposed they'd just chum it up. But he was Simon, without any titles to his name or any great deeds in his past. "Simon Lewis," he said finally, setting the spell book down and straightening up. "Knight's child, and your servant."
"My servant?"
Raziel's voice was frozen with icy disapproval. You summon me like a dog and dare to call yourself my servant? You shall be blasted from this world, that your fate may serve as a warning to others not to do likewise. It is forbidden for my own Nephilim to summon me. Why should it be different for you, Daylighter? Simon supposed he should not be shocked that the angel knew what he was, but it was startling nevertheless. As startling as the angel's size. Somehow, he had thought Raziel would be more human. Do you think because you carry the blood of one of my descendants, I must show you mercy? If so, you have gambled and lost. The mercy of heaven is for the deserving, not for those who break our covenant laws. The angel raised a hand, his finger pointed directly at Simon. Simon braced himself. This time, he did not try to say the words, only thought them. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. What mark is that? Raziel's voice was confounded. On your forehead, child. It is the mark, Simon stammered. The first mark. The mark of Cain. Raziel's great arm lowered slowly. I would kill you, but the mark prevents it. That mark was meant to be set between your brows by heaven's hand, yet I know it was not. How can this be? The angel's obvious bafflement emboldened Simon. One of your children, the Nephilim, he said. One especially gifted. She set it there, to protect me. He took a step closer to the edge of the circle. Raziel, I come to ask a favor of you, in the name of those Nephilim. They face a grave danger. One of their own has been turned to darkness, and he threatens all the rest. They need your help. I do not intervene. But you did intervene, Simon said. When Jace was dead, you brought him back. Not that we're all not really happy about that. But if you hadn't, none of this would be happening. So in a way, it rests on you to set it right. I may not be able to kill you, Raziel mused, but there is no reason I should give you what you want. I haven't even said what I want, said Simon. You want a weapon, something that can sever Jonathan Morgenstern from Jonathan Herondale. You would kill the one and preserve the other. Easiest, of course, is simply kill both. Your Jonathan was dead, and perhaps death longs for him still, and he for it. Has that ever crossed your mind? No, said Simon. I know we're not much compared to you, but we don't kill our friends. We try to save them. If heaven didn't want it that way, we ought never have been given the ability to love. He shoved his hair back, bearing the mark more fully. No. You don't need to help me. But if you don't, there's nothing stopping me from calling you up again and again, now that I know you can't kill me. Think of it as me leaning against your heavenly doorbell. Forever. Raziel, incredibly, seemed to chuckle at that. You are stubborn, he said. A veritable warrior of your people, like him whose name you bear, Simon Maccabeus. And as he gave everything for his brother Jonathan, so shall you give everything for your Jonathan. Or are you not willing? It's not just for him, said Simon, a little dazed. But yes, whatever you want, I will give it to you. If I give you what you want, you will also vow never to bother me again? I don't think, said Simon, that will be a problem. Very well, said the angel. I will tell you what I desire. I desire that blasphemous mark on your forehead. I would take the mark of Cain from you. for it was never your place to carry it. But if you take the mark, then you can kill me, Simon said. Isn't it the only thing standing between me and your heavenly wrath? The angel paused to consider for a moment. I shall swear not to harm you, whether you bear the mark or not. Simon hesitated. The angel's expression turned thunderous. The vow of the angel of heaven is the most sacred there is. Do you dare to distrust me, downworlder? Simon paused for an excruciating moment. His eyes were filled with the memory of Clary standing on her tiptoes as she pressed the steely to his forehead. The first time he had seen the mark work, when he had felt like the conductor for a lightning bolt, sheer energy passing through him with deadly force. It was a curse, one that had terrified him and made him an object of desire and fear. He had hated it. And yet now, faced with giving it up, the thing that made him special, he swallowed hard. Fine. Yes. I agree. The angel smiled, and his smile was terrible, like looking directly into the sun. Then I swear not to harm you, Simon Maccabeus. Lewis, Simon said. My last name is Lewis. But you are of the blood and faith of the Maccabees. Some say the Maccabees were marked by the hand of God. In either case, you are a warrior of heaven, Daylighter, whether you like it or not. The angel moved. Simon's eyes watered. Farazael seemed to draw the sky with him like a cloth, in swirls of black and silver and cloud white. The air around him shuddered. Something flashed overhead like the glint of light off metal, and an object struck the sand and rocks beside Simon with a metallic clatter. It was a sword. Nothing special to look at, either. A beaten-up-looking old iron sword with a blackened hilt. The edges were ragged, as if acid had eaten at them, though the tip was sharp. It looked like something that an archaeological dig might have turned up, that hadn't been properly cleaned yet. The angel spoke. Once when Joshua was near Jericho, he looked up and saw a man standing before him with a drawn sword in his hand. Joshua went to him and said, "Are you one of us or one of our adversaries?" He replied, "Neither. But as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come." Simon glanced down at the unprepossessing object at his feet. And that's this sword? It is the sword of the Archangel Michael, commander of the armies of heaven. It possesses the power of heaven's fire. Strike your enemy with this, and it will burn the evil out of him. If he is more evil than good, more hells than heavens, it will also burn the life from him. It will most certainly sever his bond with your friend, and it can harm only one of them at a time. Simon bent down and picked the sword up. It sent a shock through his hand, up his arm, into his motionless heart. Instinctively, he raised it, and the clouds above seemed to part for a moment, a ray of light arcing down to strike the dull metal of the sword and make it sing. The angel looked down upon him with cold eyes. The name of the sword cannot be spoken by your meager human tongue. You may call it glorious. Simon began. Thank you. Do not thank me. I would have killed you, Daylighter. But your mark, and now my vow, prevent it. The mark of Cain was meant to be placed upon you by God, and it was not. It shall be wiped from your brow, its protection removed. And if you call upon me again, I will not help you. Instantly, the beam of light shining down from the clouds intensified, striking the sword like a whip of fire, surrounding Simon in a cage of brilliant light and heat. The sword burned. He cried out and fell to the ground, pain lacing through his head. It felt as if someone were jabbing a red-hot needle between his eyes. He covered his face, burying his head in his arms, letting the pain wash over him. It was the worst agony he had felt since the night he had died. It faded slowly, ebbing like the tide. He rolled onto his back, staring up, his head still aching. The black clouds were beginning to roll back, showing a widening strip of blue. The angel was gone, the lake surging under the growing light as if the water were boiling. Simon began to sit up slowly. His eyes squinted painfully against the sun. He could see someone racing down the path from the farmhouse to the lake. Someone with long black hair and a purple jacket that flew out behind her like wings. She hit the end of the path and leaped onto the lakeside, her boots kicking up puffs of sand behind her. She reached him and threw herself down, wrapping her arms around him. "Simon," she whispered. He could feel the strong, steady beat of Isabel's heart. "I thought you were dead," she went on. "I saw you fall down, and I thought you were dead." Simon let her hold him, propping himself up on his hands. He realized he was listing like a ship with a hole in the side, and tried not to move. He was afraid that if he did, he would fall over. "I am dead."
"I know," Izzy snapped. "I mean, more dead than usual."
"Is." He raised his face to hers. She was kneeling over him, her legs around his, her arms around his neck. It looked uncomfortable. He let himself fall back into the sand, taking her with him. He thumped down onto his back in the cold sand with her on top of him and stared up into her black eyes. They seemed to take up the whole sky. She touched his forehead in wonder. "Your mark's gone." Raziel took it away, in exchange for the sword. He gestured toward the blade. Up at the farmhouse, he could see two dark specks standing in front of the sun porch, watching them. Alec and Magnus. "It's the Archangel Michael's sword. It's called Glorious." "Simon," she kissed his cheek. "You did it. You got the angel. You got the sword." Magnus and Alec had started down the path to the lake. Simon closed his eyes, exhausted. Isabel leaned over him, her hair brushing the sides of his face. "Don't try to talk." She smelled like tears. "You're not cursed anymore," she whispered. "You're not cursed." Simon linked his fingers with hers. He felt as if he were floating on a dark river, the shadows closing in around him. Only her hand anchored him to earth. "I know." Chapter 19. Love and Blood. Methodically and carefully, Clary was tearing Jace's room apart. She was still in her tank top, though she'd pulled on a pair of jeans. Her hair was scraped behind her head in a messy bun, and her nails were powdered with dust. She'd searched under his bed, in all the drawers and cabinets, crawled under the wardrobe and desk, and looked in the pockets of all his clothes for a second Steely, but she had found nothing. She had told Sebastian she was exhausted, that she needed to go upstairs and lie down. He had seemed distracted, and had waved her away. Images of Jace's face kept flashing behind her eyelids every time she shut her eyes. The way he had looked at her, betrayed, as if he didn't know her anymore. But there was no point dwelling on that. She could sit on the edge of the bed and cry into her hands, thinking about what she had done, but it would do no one any good. She owed it to Jace, to herself, to keep moving, searching. If she could just find a Steely.
She was lifting the mattress off the bed, searching the space between it and the box springs, when a knock came on the door. She dropped the mattress, though not before discerning there was nothing under it. She tightened her hands into fists, took a deep breath, stalked to the door, and threw it open. Sebastian stood on the threshold. For the first time, he was wearing something other than black and white. The same black trousers and boots, admittedly, but he also wore a scarlet leather tunic, intricately worked with gold and silver runes, and held together by a row of metal clasps around the front. There were hammered silver bracelets on each of his wrists, and he wore the Morgenstern ring. She blinked at him.
Red?
Ceremonial, he replied. Colors mean different things to shadow hunters than they do to humans. He said the word humans with contempt. You know the old Nephilim children's rhyme, don't you? Black for hunting through the night, for death and sorrow the color's white. Gold for a bride in her wedding gown, and red to call enchantment down.
Shadow hunters get married in gold? Clary said.
Not that she cared particularly, but she was trying to wedge her body into the gap between the door and the frame so that he couldn't look behind her and see the mess she'd made out of Jace's normally neat room.
Sorry to crush your dreams of a white wedding, he grinned at her.
Speaking of which, I brought you something to wear. He drew his hand out from behind his back. He was holding a folded item of clothing. She took it from him and let it unroll. It was a long, drifting column of scarlet fabric with an odd golden sheen to the material, like the edge of a flame. The straps were gold.
Our mother used to wear this to circle ceremonies, before she betrayed our father, he said.
Put it on. I want you to wear it tonight.
Tonight?
Well, you can hardly go to the ceremony in what you're wearing now. His eyes raked her, from her bare feet to the tank top clinging to her body with sweat, to her dusty jeans.
How you look tonight, the impression you make on our new acolytes, is important.
Put it on. Her mind was whirling. The ceremony tonight. Our new acolytes.
How much time do I have to get ready? She asked.
An hour, perhaps, he said. We should be at the sacred site by midnight. The others will be gathering there. It wouldn't do to be late.
An hour.
Heart hammering, Clary threw the garment across the bed, where it glimmered like chainmail. When she turned back, he was still in the doorway, a half-smile on his face, as if he intended to wait there while she changed. She moved to shut the door. He caught her wrist.
Tonight, he said, you call me Jonathan. Jonathan Morgenstern. Your brother.
A shudder ran over her whole body, and she dropped her eyes, hoping he couldn't see the hatred in them.
Whatever you say.
The moment he was gone, she reached for one of Jace's leather jackets. She slipped it on, taking comfort in the warmth and the familiar smell of him. She slid her feet into shoes and crept out into the hallway, wishing for a steely and a new soundless rune. She could hear water running downstairs and Sebastian's off-key whistling, but her own footsteps still sounded like cannon explosions in her ears. She crept along, keeping close to the wall, until she reached Sebastian's door and slid inside. It was dim, the only illumination the ambient city light coming from the windows, whose curtains were pulled back. It was a mess, just as it had been the first time she'd been in it. She started with his closet, stuffed full of expensive clothes, silk shirts, leather jackets, Armani suits, Bruno Magli shoes. On the floor of the closet was a white shirt, wadded up and stained with blood, blood old enough to have dried to brown. Clary looked at it for a long moment and shut the closet door. She set herself to the desk next, pulling out drawers, rifling through papers.
She'd rather hoped for something simple, like a lined piece of notebook paper with "My Evil Plan" written across the top, but no luck. There were dozens of papers with complex numerical and alchemical figuring on them, and even a piece of stationery that began, "My Beautiful One," in Sebastian's cramped handwriting. She spared a moment to wonder who on earth Sebastian's beautiful one could be. She hadn't thought of him as someone who ever had romantic feelings about anyone, before turning to the nightstand by his bed. She pulled open the drawer. Inside were a stack of notes. On top of them, something glimmered, something circular and metallic. Her fairy ring. Isabel sat with her arm around Simon as they drove back toward Brooklyn. He was exhausted, his head throbbing, his body pierced with aches. The Magnus had given him back his ring at the lake. He'd been unable to reach Clary with it. Worst of all, he was hungry. He liked how close Isabel was sitting to him, the way she rested her hand just above the crook of his elbow, tracing patterns there, sometimes sliding her fingers down to his wrist. But the scent of her, perfume and blood, made his stomach growl. It was starting to grow dark outside, the late autumn sunset coming soon on the heels of the day, dimming the interior of the truck's cab. Alex and Magnus's voices were murmurs in the shadows. Simon let his eyes flutter closed, seeing the angel printed against the back of his eyelids. A burst of white light.
"Simon!" Clary's voice exploded inside his head, jerking him instantly awake. "Are you there?"
A sharp gasp escaped his lips.
"Clary? I was so worried. Sebastian took my ring away from me. Simon, there may not be much time. I have to tell you, they have a second mortal cup. They plan to raise Lilith and create an army of dark shadow hunters. Ones with the same powers as the Nephilim, but allied to the demon world."
"You're kidding me," Simon said. It took him a moment to realize he'd spoken aloud. Isabel stirred against him, and Magnus looked over curiously. "You all right there, vampire?"
"It's Clary," Simon said.
All three of them looked at him with identical astonished expressions.
"She's trying to talk to me."
He slapped his hands over his ears, slumping down in his seat and trying to concentrate on her words.
"When are they going to do it?"
"Tonight.
Soon. I don't know where we are exactly, but it's about 10 p.m. here."
"Then you're about 5 hours ahead of us.
Are you in Europe?"
"I can't even guess. Sebastian mentioned something called the Seventh Sacred Site. I don't know what that is. But I found some of his notes, and apparently it's an ancient tomb. It looks like a sort of doorway, and demons can be summoned through it."
"Clary, I've never heard of anything like that, but Magnus or the others might.
Please, Simon, tell them as quickly as you can. Sebastian's going to resurrect Lilith. He wants war, a total war with the Shadow Hunters. He has about 40 or 50 Nephilim ready to follow him. They'll be there. Simon, he wants to burn the world down. We have to do anything we can to stop him."
"If things are that dangerous, you need to get yourself out of there."
She sounded tired.
"I'm trying, but it might be too late."
Simon was dimly aware that everyone else in the truck was staring at him, concern on their faces. He didn't care. Clary's voice in his mind was like a rope tossed over a chasm. And if he could grip his end of it, maybe he could pull her to safety, or at least keep her from slipping away.
"Clary, listen. I can't tell you how. It's too long a story. But we have a weapon. It could be used on either Jace or Sebastian without hurting the other. And according to the person who gave it to us, it might be able to cut them apart."
"Cut them apart?
How?"
"He said it would burn all the evil out of the one we used it on. So if we used it on Sebastian, I'm guessing, it would burn away the bond between them because the bond is evil." Simon felt his head throb, and hoped he sounded more confident than he did.
I'm not sure. It's very powerful anyway. It's called Glorious.
And you'd use it on Sebastian? It would burn them apart without killing them?
Well, that's the idea. I mean, there is some chance it would destroy Sebastian. It would depend on if there's any good left in him. If he's more hells than heavens, I think is what the angel said.
The angel?
Her alarm was palpable.
Simon, what if you...
Her voice broke off, and Simon was suddenly filled with a clamor of emotion. Surprise, anger, terror, pain. He cried out, sitting bolt upright.
Clary?
But there was only silence ringing in his head.
Clary!
He cried out. And then, aloud, he said,
Damn,
she's gone again.
What happened?
Isabel demanded.
Is she all right? What's going on?
I think we have a lot less time than we thought, Simon said in a voice much calmer than he felt. Magnus, pull the truck over. We have to talk.
So, Sebastian said, filling the doorway as he looked down at Clary. Would it be deja vu if I asked you what you were doing in my room, little sister?
Clary swallowed against her suddenly dry throat. The light in the hallway was bright behind Sebastian, turning him into a silhouette. She couldn't see the expression on his face.
Looking for you? She hazarded. You're sitting on my bed, he said. Did you think I was under it?
He walked into the room, sauntered, really, as if he knew something she didn't. Something no one else knew.
So, why were you looking for me? And why haven't you changed for the ceremony?
The dress, she said, it doesn't fit.
Of course it fits, he said, sitting down on the bed beside her.
He turned to face her, his back to the headboard.
Everything else in that room fits you. This should fit you too.
It's silk and chiffon. It doesn't stretch.
You're a skinny little thing. It shouldn't have to.
He took her right wrist, and she curled her fingers in, desperately trying to hide the ring.
Look, my fingers go right around your wrist.
His skin felt hot against hers, sending sharp prickles through her nerves. She remembered the way, in Idris, his touch had burned her like acid.
The seventh sacred site, she said, not looking at him.
Is that where Jace went?
Yes. I sent him ahead. He's readying things for our arrival. We'll meet him there.
Her heart dived in her chest.
He's not coming back?
Not before the ceremony. She caught the curling edge of Sebastian's smile.
Which is good, because he'd be so disappointed when I told him about this.
He slid his hand swiftly over hers, uncurling her fingers. The gold ring blazed there like a signal fire.
Did you think I wouldn't recognize fairy work?
Do you think the queen is such a fool that she would send you off to retrieve these for her without knowing you would keep them for yourself? She wanted you to bring this here, where I would find it. He jerked the ring off her finger with a smirk.
You've been in contact with the queen? Clary demanded.
How?
With this ring, Sebastian purred, and Clary remembered the queen saying in her high, sweet voice,
Jonathan Morganstone could be a powerful ally. The fair folk are an old people. We do not make hasty decisions, but wait to see in what direction the wind blows first.
Do you really think she'd let you get your hands on something that would let you communicate with your little friend without her being able to listen in?
Since I took it from you, I've spoken to her. She's spoken to me.
You were a fool to trust her, little sister.
She likes to be on the winning side of things, the Seelie Queen. And that side will be ours, Clary. Ours. His voice was low and soft.
Forget them. Your shadow hunter friends, Your place is with us, with me. Your blood cries out for power like mine does. Whatever your mother may have done to twist your conscience, you know who you are. His hand caught at her wrist again, pulling her toward him. Jocelyn made all the wrong decisions. She sided with the Clave against her family. This is your chance to rectify her mistake. She tried to pull her arm back. Let me go, Sebastian. I mean it. His hand slid up from her wrist, encircling her upper arm with his fingers. You're such a little thing. Who'd think you were such a spitfire, especially in bed? She leapt to her feet, jerking away from him. What did you just say? He rose as well, his lips curving up at the corners. He was so much taller than she was, almost exactly as much taller as Jace was. He leaned in close to her when he spoke, and his voice was low and rough. Everything that marks Jace marks me, he said, down to your fingernails. He was grinning. 8 parallel scratches on my back, little sister. Are you saying you didn't put them there? A soft explosion went off in her head, like a dull firework of rage. She looked at his laughing face, and she thought of Jace, and of Simon, and the words they'd just exchanged. If the Queen really could eavesdrop on their conversations, then she might know about Glorious already. But Sebastian didn't know, couldn't know. She snatched the ring from his hand and threw it to the ground. She heard him give a shout, but she'd already brought her foot down on it, feeling it give way, the gold smashing to powder. He looked at her incredulously as she drew her foot back. You! She drew back her right hand, the strongest one, and drove her fist into his stomach. He was taller, broader, and stronger than she was, but she had the element of surprise. He doubled over, choking, and she snatched the steely from his weapons belt. Then she ran. Magnus jerked the wheel to the side so fast that the tires screeched. Isabel shrieked. They bumped up onto the shoulder of the road, under the shadow of a copse of partly leafless trees. The next thing Simon knew, the doors were open and everyone was tumbling out onto the blacktop. The sun was going down, and the headlights of the truck were on, lighting them all in an eerie glow. All right, vampire boy, said Magnus, shaking his head hard enough to shed glitter. What the hell is going on? Alec leaned against the truck as Simon explained, repeating the conversation with Clary as accurately as he could before the whole thing flew out of his head. Did she say anything about getting her and Jace out of there? Isabel asked when he was done, her face pale in the yellowish glow from the headlights. No, said Simon. And Iz, I don't think Jace wants to get out. He wants to be where he is. Isabel crossed her arms and looked down at her boots, her black hair sweeping across her face. What's this 7th sacred site business? Said Alec. I know about the 7 wonders of the world, but 7 sacred sites? They're more in the interest of warlocks than Nephilim, said Magnus. Each is a place where key lines converge, forming a matrix, a sort of net within which magical spells are amplified. The 7th is a stone tomb in Ireland. The name means the Cavern of Sorrows. It's in a very bleak, uninhabited area called the Burren. A good place to raise a demon, if it's a big one. He tugged at a spike of hair. This is bad. Really bad. You think he could do it? Make dark shadow hunters? Simon asked. Everything has an alliance, Simon. The alliance of the Nephilim is seraphic, but if it were demonic, they'd still be as strong, as powerful as they are now. But they would be dedicated to the eradication of mankind instead of its salvation. We have to get there, Isabel said. We have to stop them. Him, you mean, said Alec. We have to stop him, Sebastian. Jace is his ally now. You have to accept that, Alec, Magnus said. A light misty drizzle had begun to fall. The drops gleamed gold in the headlights' glow. Ireland is 5 hours ahead. They're doing the ceremony at midnight. It's 5 o'clock here. We have an hour and a half, 2 hours at most, to stop them. Then we shouldn't be waiting. We should be going, Isabel said, a tinge of panic in her voice. If we're going to stop him... Is, there are only 4 of us, Alec said. We don't even know what kind of numbers we're up against. Simon glanced at Magnus, who was watching Alec and Isabel argue with a peculiarly detached expression.
Magnus, Simon said, why didn't we just portal to the farm?
You portaled half of Idris to the Brosselin Plain.
I wanted to give you enough time to change your mind, said Magnus, not taking his eyes off his boyfriend.
But we can portal from here, Simon said. I mean, you could do that for us.
Yeah, said Magnus. But like Alec says, we don't know what we're up against in terms of numbers. I'm a pretty powerful warlock, but Jonathan Morgenstern is no ordinary shadow hunter, and neither is Jace for that matter. And if they succeed in raising Lilith, she'll be a lot weaker than she was, but she's still Lilith.
But she's dead, said Isabel. Simon killed her.
Greater demons don't die, said Magnus.
Simon scattered her between worlds. It will take a long time for her to reform, and she will be weak for years, unless Sebastian calls her up again.
He pushed a hand through his wet, spiked hair.
We have the sword, Isabel said. We can take out Sebastian. We have Magnus and Simon.
We don't even know if the sword will work, said Alec.
And it won't do us much good if we can't get to Sebastian. And Simon isn't even Mr. Indestructible anymore. He can be killed just like the rest of us.
They all looked at Simon.
We have to try, he said.
Look, we don't know how many are going to be there, no. We have a little time, not a lot, but enough. If we portal to grab some reinforcements...
Reinforcements from where? Isabel demanded.
I'll go to Maya and Jordan back at the apartment, said Simon, his mind quickly ticking over possibilities. See if Jordan can get any assistance from the Praetor Lupus.
Magnus, go to the downtown police station, see about enlisting whatever members of the pack are around.
Isabel and Alec.
You're splitting us up? Isabel demanded, her voice rising.
What about fire messages, or...
No one's going to trust a fire message about something like this, said Magnus.
And besides, fire messages are for shadow hunters. Do you really want to communicate this information to the clay via fire message instead of going to the Institute yourself?
Fine. Isabel stalked around to the side of the car. She yanked the door open, but didn't get inside. Instead, she reached in and drew out Glorious. It shone in the dim light like a bolt of dark lightning. The words carved on the blade flickered in the car light.
Quisat Deus?
The rain was starting to paste Isabel's black hair to her neck. She looked formidable as she walked back to rejoin the group.
Then we leave the car here. We split up. But we meet back at the Institute in an hour. That's when we leave. Whoever we have with us.
She met each of her companions' eyes, one by one, daring them to challenge her.
Simon, take this.
She held out Glorious to him, hilt forward.
Me?
Simon was startled. But I haven't really used a sword before.
You called it down, Isabel said, her dark eyes glossy in the rain.
The angel gave it to you, Simon. And you will be the one who carries it.
Clary dashed down the hallway and hit the steps with a clatter, racing for the downstairs and for the spot on the wall that Jace had told her was the only entrance and exit from the apartment. She had no illusions that she could escape.
She needed only a few moments to do what had to be done. She heard Sebastian's boots loud on the glass staircase behind her and put on a burst of speed, almost slamming into the wall. She jammed the stele into it, point first, drawing frantically, a pattern as simple as a cross, new to the world. Sebastian's fist closed on the back of her jacket, jerking her backward, the stele flying out of her hand. She gasped as he swung her up off her feet and slammed her into the wall, knocking the breath out of her. He glanced at the mark she had made on the wall, and his lips curled into a sneer. "The opening rune?" he said. He leaned forward and hissed into her ear. "And you didn't even finish it. Not that it matters. Do you really think there's a place on this earth you could go where I couldn't find you?" Clary responded with an epithet that would have gotten her kicked out of class at St. Xavier's. Just as he started to laugh, she raised her hand and slapped him across the face so hard her fingers stung. In his surprise, he loosened his grip on her, and she jerked away from him and flipped herself over the table, making for the downstairs bedroom, which at least had a lock on the door. And he was in front of her, grabbing the lapels of her jacket and swinging her around. Her feet went out from under her, and she would have fallen if he hadn't pinned her to the wall with his body, his arms to either side, making a cage around her. His grin was diabolical. Gone was a stylish boy who'd strolled by the Seine with her and drunk hot chocolate and talked about belonging. His eyes were all black, no pupil, like tunnels. "What's wrong, little sis? You look upset." She could barely catch her breath. "Cracked my nail polish slapping your worthless face. See?" She showed him her finger, just one of them. "Cute," he snorted. "You know how I knew you'd betray us? How I knew you wouldn't be able to help it? Because you're too much like me." He pressed her back harder against the wall. She could feel his chest rise and fall against hers. She was at eye level with a straight, sharp line of his collarbone. His body felt like a prison around hers, pinning her in place. "I'm nothing like you. Let me go!" "You're everything like me," he growled into her ear. "You infiltrated us. You faked friendship, faked caring." "I never had to fake caring about Jace." She saw something flash in his eyes then, a dark jealousy. And she wasn't even sure who he was jealous of. He put his lips against her cheek, close enough that she felt them move against her skin when he spoke. "You screwed us over," he murmured. His hand was around her left arm like a vice. Slowly he began to move it down. Probably literally screwed Jace over. She couldn't help it. She flinched. She felt him inhale sharply. "You did," he said. "You slept with him." He sounded almost betrayed. "It's none of your business." He caught at her face, turning her to look at him, fingers digging into her chin. "You can't screw someone into being good. Nicely heartless move, though." His lovely mouth curved into a cold smile. "You know he doesn't remember any of it, right? Did he show you a good time, at least? Because I would have." She tasted bile in her throat. "You're my brother." "Those words don't mean anything where we're concerned. We aren't human. Their rules don't apply to us. Stupid laws about what DNA can be mixed with what. Hypocritical, really, considering. We're already experiments. The rulers of ancient Egypt used to marry their siblings, you know. Cleopatra married her brother. Strengthens the bloodline." She looked at him with loathing. "I knew you were crazy," she said, "but I didn't realize you were absolutely, spectacularly out of your goddamn mind." "Oh, I don't think there's anything crazy about it. Who do we belong to but each other?" "Jace," she said. "I belong with Jace." He made a dismissive noise. "You can have Jace. I thought you needed him. I do, but not for what you need him for. His hands were suddenly on her waist. We can share.